Srila Prabhupada Ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta Ki, Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Giriraj Maharaj Ki, Goprem Anandi. So what did we discuss in last week's class? Points.
What purpose of tradition and Bhagavatam is to understand Krishna and worship Krishna?
Good. Anything else?
Found the six appearances of the Lord very, very fascinating. In the Bhagavan course, he has all these.
Anything else?
Krishna is the source of everything, several kinds of karma.
That is true. Okay, so tonight we'll continue the prayers of Akura, finish the chapter, which is verses 16 to 30. Tomorrow night we'll do the overview of the section 33 to 40. Just give me some water. I'm jabbing the cup of there. Just make sure it's warm. Okay, so verse number 16, chapter 40. Akura's prayers. All the worlds, to enjoy your pastimes, you manifest yourself in various forms in this material world. And these incarnations cleanse away all the unhappiness of those who joyfully chant your glories. So Krishna has already mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita there are three reasons why he appears. So why does he come to this world? Yeah. So he's going to Paritranaya Sadhunam Dharma Samstapanataya. So to establish religion, to satisfy devotees, and to destroy the miscreants. So here it is being pointed out that he comes especially to satisfy the devotees, to give the devotees satisfaction. That's actually the reason for Krishna's appearance. Prabhupada points out in the Bhagavad Gita and the purport that the other incarnations or the time element or Krishna's associates can perform the other functions, but only he can fully satisfy everyone. To the highest degree. In other words, he can express all the rasas which are found in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Only Krishna can show parakya bhav, for example. The other associates cannot, the other incarnations cannot show parakya bhav, or will not show parakya bhav. So Krishna is unique amongst all of them. Now, as it says here in the verse, these incarnations cleanse away all the unhappiness of those who joyfully chant your glories. So by remembering Krishna's various incarnations, it enlivens the devotees. In that, in the Chatur Shloki of the Gita, it says, Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. By hearing and chanting, whenever the devotees come together and they hear and chant about Krishna, it gives tushta, which means satisfaction, and rama means pleasure. So tushanti cha or manti cha means you'll find satisfaction and pleasure by hearing about Krishna's pastimes. Now Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he points out in his commentary on this verse He says that three things are destroyed when we hear about Krishna's pastimes. When we hear and chant about his incarnations, about the various forms that come. So the first thing that is destroyed is ignorance. We overcome identification with matter by hearing about Krishna, by hearing about the pastimes of the incarnations. All of our ignorance is destroyed. Any material conception is destroyed. But you have to hear on the deepest level. If we hear these pastimes perfectly, it means that if we hear them in a very deep state of meditation, our ignorance will be destroyed. It has to move from the platform of jnana to vijnana eventually. Instead of just hearing Krishna's pastimes in a mechanical way. In an entertaining way, yeah. Materially entertaining. Means that sometimes we hear the pastimes of Krishna, but then we think, oh, I've heard this before. I know this pastime. I've heard this pastime. And sometimes we hear it like that. It becomes mechanical. I've heard Nisringadev's Leela before. It's not like that. And then we lose attraction to hearing it properly. But when we hear it on a very deep level, it actually destroys ignorance or material identification. My identification with the material energy is destroyed. But you have to hear it on a very deep level, a very contemplative level. So then it turns from jnana to vijnana, or you begin to realize Krishna's pastimes just by hearing about them. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that when you hear about Krishna's pastimes, then ignorance is destroyed. The second thing which is destroyed is illusion. Illusion means misidentification with the material energy. And the third thing which is destroyed is unhappiness. If you're actually hearing Krishna's pastimes on the spiritual platform, you cannot be nirananda. It means you cannot be miserable. You will be completely satisfied if you hear Krishna's pastimes with the right attitude, and you'll feel completely blissful. That is the nature of the soul. When the soul is in contact with Krishna, the soul must feel bliss, because Krishna is always blissful. Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. And the soul is also Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. That is the nature of our constitution. We're constitutionally blissful. And when we hear about Krishna's pastimes directly, in the right consciousness, we will feel great bliss. As Krishna says in the Gita, Tushyanti Cha Ramanti Cha. By hearing these subject matters, you will feel Rama. Rama means great pleasure. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says this is actually the panacea, or the way to destroy ignorance in this material world, by constantly hearing and chanting about Krishna. It was interesting because I was this morning I read something that Prabhupada said from the Transcendental Diary. Not the Transcendental Diary. The Great Transcendental Adventure, which is the book that Korma Prabhu wrote about Prabhupada in Australia in the 1970s. So when I read the pastime this morning, Prabhupada was in Australia. I'm just trying to think where he was. It might have been Sydney. So Prabhupada was in Australia, and his servant was in the next room, Upendra. And Prabhupada could hear the conversation. He was talking to another disciple. But they were criticizing a third disciple. So Prabhupada called him in. He said, come. So he came in. He said, were you speaking Prajalpa? And then Upendra said, is criticizing one of your god brothers, is that Prajalpa?
Excuse me.
I think so.
Sorry.
He said, is that Prajalpa? Criticizing your god brother? A god sister? Prabhupada said, yes, that is materialistic talk. Prabhupada said to him that whenever two devotees come together, you should not waste your time just with mundane talk, you know, criticizing other devotees or speaking about materialistic things like that. Devotees should not think politics, finance, like this. When devotees come together, Prabhupada said they should discuss Srimad Bhagavatam. When devotees meet together, they should enliven each other. Tushanticha, Ramanticha. So, Prabhupada said to Upendra, he said, go back into the other room and start reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he went back into the other room, got the Bhagavatam. And then he said, when the other devotee comes, then you discuss with him what you are hearing, what you are reading. This destroys ignorance. It doesn't mean that we just speak Bhagavatam all the time to the other devotees, because we don't do that. I don't do that. We don't do that. You know, we say other things also, but the underpinning must be there of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, you must be speaking Bhagavatam regularly and discussing it regularly with devotees. Then, when you do meet with devotees, your consciousness will not go down into very mundane topics. It will always remain on a higher level. Even one time I went to Vrindavan and I was having lunch at the MBT, that restaurant in upstairs in the complex. So I went up there and I was by myself, and then I was sitting by myself, and then one other devotee came from Brazil, South America. So he sat opposite me, and he said, as soon as he sat there, he said, Prabhu, I don't want to speak any Prajalpa. He just sat right next to me. He said, Prabhu, I don't want to speak any Prajalpa. He said, I don't want to speak politics, anything. And I was sitting there eating. I was having no problem. So I said, where are you from? He said, Brazil. And, you know, he told me so many things about himself. And he was staying in Vrindavan for 3 months. And every day he was just going to different pastime places, Lilasthans, and he was reading and absorbing himself. So he said, I don't want my consciousness to go down. And I said, no problem. We can talk. Things to talk about, Krishna Katha to talk about. So then we had a nice conversation. He said, you ever come to Brazil, you come and stay with me. I said, no problem. You ever come to Melbourne, you come and stay with me. No problem. And we never saw each other again. But the point is that the consciousness was correct. So that's what the Bhagavatam is pointing out here. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is pointing out. When you talk about Krishna, you discuss Krishna Gita, ignorance is destroyed, illusion is destroyed, and unhappiness is destroyed. So we should always endeavor to make that our practice, to regularly talk about Krishna. So, any points?
What's the third thing? Ignorance, happiness,
illusion.
Illusion.
I just have a question. When you said that there were three things, this is a question because I want to understand. It's not a criticism. But I thought of lust and karma as well. So are they underneath any of those, or are we talking completely different things? Can you help me understand
that? Underneath ignorance. Anything else? Okay. 17 and 18. I offer my obeisances to you, the cause of the creation, Lord Matsya, who swam about in the ocean of dissolution, to Lord Hayagriva, the killer of Madhu and Kaitaba, to the immense tortoise, Lord Korma, who supported Mandara Mountain, and to the boar incarnation, Lord Varaha, who enjoyed lifting the earth. So now he's going to begin to describe the incarnations. Because Krishna is?
Avatari.
Avatari means?
Original.
The source of all the avatars, the incarnations. So all of the incarnations, they're coming from Krishna. And Krishna is right there on his chariot. So the person who is right there on his chariot is the source of Nisringhadev. Matsya, Koma, Varaha, Vamana, Buddha, Kalki, Ram, Parasaram, thank you. Parasaram. All the different incarnations are coming from Krishna, this person who was right there before him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that all of these forms of Krishna are eternal. Each form. It is, Krishna is, the original form of Krishna is the cowherd boy in Vrindavan. That is God. But then sometimes it's like, so you go to the office. You know, when you're at home, you know, with your family, your close friends, you know, you are yourself. Just your natural personality. But then when you go to the office, or you go in public, or you perform different activities, like a different part of your personality is displayed because of these circumstances. So not everyone sees everything. What is seen at home, you know, with your intimate associates or your close friends, they know you differently. Sometimes, like, you know, we all know each other. And then sometimes someone says, oh, he did that or he said that. We said, oh, really? He would do it like that? So then we become surprised because it's like an element of the person that we do not understand. So the original form of Krishna is the cowherd boy. But then when he has to act in a particular way, then he will manifest different features of his personality. He won't display the intimate side of the personality. So in the material world, he takes on these forms. So Korma is a large tortoise. And Prabhupada says that Krishna appears in every species of life. We don't hear about everything in the Bhagavatam. We only hear about certain incarnations. But if you think of all the species of life, Krishna appears in all the different species of life. So he appears according to the necessity. So you'll take on a half man, half lion form in this world, or the form of the tortoise, or the form of the dwarf, or the form of the boar. In the spiritual world, all these forms are there, but it is explained that when you see the first canto of the Bhagavatam, the Narayan expansions on the Vaikuntha planets, that's what the incarnations look like. In other words, in the spiritual world, Nrisimhadeva does not have a half-man, half-lion form. Varaha does not have a boar form in the spiritual world, in Vaikuntha. They have an Orion form. But when they come to this world, then they take the Leela form. They take a particular pastime form like that. But the point is that both forms are eternal. Right? That's why we worship the form of the boar. Right? Because that form is eternal. But it's only in the material world. And eternally, Lord Varaha has his own Vaikuntha planet in the spiritual world. And in that form, he has the Narayan form. That is also eternal. So all of these different forms are eternal. It's further explained that Krishna takes these forms to maintain religion, or Dharma. Dharma samstapanataya. So he takes these forms to make sure religion is maintained within this world. So we're going to read about his different incarnations. So in this particular verse, or two verses, it explains that he takes the form of Matsya. So how does Matsya protect religion or Dharma?
By saving the Vedas.
Yeah, he saves the Vedas. Huh? He takes the boat, if you read the pastime. So he maintains Dharma. Right? And then we have Hayagriva. How does Hayagriva maintain Dharma? He kills the two demons,
Madhu
and Kaitava. And they stole the Vedas from Lord Brahma. So then he came as Hayagriva and he killed them and he took the Vedas back and gave them back to Lord Brahma. So he protects the Vedas. Dharma. Then Lord Korma, how does he maintain Dharma?
By facilitating the churning of the ocean.
Yeah, the churning of the ocean. He allows the demigods to churn the ocean of milk so that they can maintain the universe. Now they take many things from the ocean of milk which they use to maintain the universe. So he facilitates and assists in that way. And then Varaha. How does Varaha maintain Dharma? He picks up the earth and brings it back to its position so people can practice Krishna consciousness. Right? If the earth right now is at the bottom of the universe, what would we be doing?
Drowning.
It would all be drowning. We'd all be we would have left our body by now. So how will you go back to Godhead if you don't have a form? So Krishna maintains, he lifts the earth up so that we can all practice Krishna consciousness. Any points?
Are these forms, you said they're eternal, but they are not in this future world. So I just was wondering, they are still there in this future world, or only they come for some time?
They're in the spiritual world, but they look differently, that's all.
But do they? They
are not
present
now. Yeah, of course. And the Sringadeva is in the spiritual world on his Vaikuntha planet, and he expands himself into the material world. So he's there and there simultaneously.
But in the material world only for a little while?
No, he keeps going to each universe. He's in the material world right now, but he's in a different universe.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So he's always in the material world, and he's always in the spiritual world. Obeisances to you, the amazing lion, Lord Nasrimha, who removed your saintly devotee's fear, and to the dwarf Vamana, who stepped over the three worlds. Obeisances to you, Lord of the Bhrigus, who cut down the forest of the conceited royal order, and to Lord Ram, the best of the Raghu dynasty, who put an end to the demon Ravana. So how is Dharma being maintained? Who was mentioned first? Nisringa. How does Nisringa maintain Dharma?
Kills the demon.
We, as devotees of Krishna, we are called Vaishnavas, right? Actually, we're not Vaishnavas. We're Vaishnava Bas. Vaishnava Bas means shadow of a Vaishnava. Prabhupada was a Vaishnava. He's like a pure devotee. That's a Vaishnava. Prabhupada was very lenient and very liberal and very kind, and he also called us Vaishnavas. But we're not actually Vaishnavas. We're Vaishnava Bas. We're like a reflection of a Vaishnava. Or we are following a Vaishnava, but we don't have all the qualities of a Vaishnava. We're not pure devotees. So even still, our duty in this world is the same as Krishna's, because we are Krishna's representatives. So what is Krishna's duty in this material world? To protect devotees, to kill demons, and to maintain Dharma. So what is our duty in the material world? To protect devotees, kill demons, maintain Dharma. That's our duty. That's our seva in this world. So we can't kill demons in the traditional way, although we would like to, but we're not allowed to anymore. Right? If you hit someone now, even if they break into your house and you hit them, they may take you to court. It's possible. So it's different now, the way. So Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he killed the demoniac spirit. So how do we kill the demons in Kali Yuga? We preach, and we give them the holy name, and we try to destroy their demoniac mentality. But it's the same mission that Krishna had. So each one of us has to perform this same mission. So Nisringadeva, if he came to kill Hiranyakashipu, right? So we also have to preach in the mood of Lord Chaitanya and kill the demoniac tendencies. Maintain Dharma within this world, which is a great challenge in this day and age, because everyone is so adharmic. They do anything, everything. So we have to maintain the highest principles. The principles we maintain in Kali Yuga are very high. for Kali Yuga standards. You know, what we do in for Kali Yuga standards is very high. You know, four regulative principles. No one does that in Kali Yuga. You know, it's rare that you find someone. Occasionally you find someone who does that, but it's a rare thing in Kali Yuga. We follow that. We chant the names of God 2 hours a day. That's a lot of dedication. Just like, you know, we're cultivating people at the moment. One girl, she's coming to the farm, Western girl. So we're preaching to her, and on the weekend she came, so I gave her japa beads. I said, so every day you do this chanting. You know, to bring someone to the level where they can chant for 2 hours a day, that's a high thing in Kali Yuga. I said, you know, just chant one round. If you can do more, do more. Right? So she came back, she said, I did 2 rounds. I said, good. She went home, sent a message. I did another 2 rounds. Good. Keep going, keep going. But actually, it's a very high level in Kali Yuga for people to do this. But they should do it. But it is a very high level in Kali Yuga. So we have the same duty to maintain Dharma, to protect devotees, and to destroy demoniac tendencies. So here, Sringadeva is doing that, and then we hear about Parashuram. He does the same thing. We hear about Ramachandra. He does the same thing. And who was the other personality? Vamanadeva. Yeah. Also took Bali Maharaja's kingdom and gave it back to Indra, because the demigods should be in control. The devatas, at the moment, who's in control of the earth? The asuras. And what are they doing? They're making problems. I was driving up here from the farm, so I turn on the news, see what's going on in the world. Just problems. What's going on? We're making a mess of this, 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 and this. Because demons are in control. Asuras. When devotees are in control, everything becomes peaceful. Any points? Okay. Obeisances to you, Lord of the Satwatas, and to your forms of Vasudev, Sankarsana, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. So, these are the expansions. We'll speak about this next week. Next week is the appearance day of Lord Balaram. Who is Lord Balaram? First expansion of Krishna. From him comes all of the other expansions. Krishna expands himself to Balaram, and he says, now you do everything. Krishna doesn't do anything more. After Balaram has expanded, that's it. And then he says, you do it all. So now Balaram expands himself into all the other incarnations. So these are all expansions of the expansions. So these four are mentioned here. Krishna is the source of all of them. Krishna, when he goes into Dwarka, he is called Vasudev. Balaram is called Sankarsana. And then they have their two sons, Prajumna, and grandson, Aniruddha. And then from them, second Sankarsana, everything expands again. So Krishna is the source of all of the incarnations. Any points?
I don't understand this from first Jatibhiva. The Vasudev, Sankarsana, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. But how can Vasudev come from Balaram?
Because Balaram, everything expands from Balaram.
So how can Vasudev come from Balaram?
Because he's the second, it's not the original form of Krishna. Krishna expands at Balaram, and then from Balaram, but the second form of Krishna will manifest or expand.
You mean the Vasudev who is in Mathura?
And Dwarka, Vasudev Krishna.
Dwarka. So that's the first.
Yeah, that's when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, then the expansion goes.
See, Mathura also is the Vasudev.
Yeah. The original Krishna stays in Vrindavan.
Yes, yeah, so what I'm saying that the first one is okay in Vrindavan. Then about the second
Chatavyuha is
from Dharan.
Yeah, outside. That means Vaikuntha.
Oh, okay.
Obeisances to your form as the faultless Lord Buddha, who will deliver the Daityas and Danavas, and to Lord Kalki, the annihilator of the meat eaters posing as kings. So, the interesting point about this is that these incarnations have not appeared yet. So this is predictive. For a Purana or a Shastra to be authorized, it must be predictive. Just like if you look in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many predictions of things which have not taken place yet. The 12th canto is predictive. This is in Kali Yuga, this will happen, this will happen, this will happen. And in the first canto, third chapter, list of Krishna's incarnations, there are incarnations that are spoken of which haven't even appeared yet in this particular time cycle. So this is the nature of a Shastra. For a Purana to be authorized, it must have predictive elements. It must be able to predict things that will happen in the future. Even in the Bible, things like that happen. The Bible says, you know, these things will happen in the future. For any scripture to be potent, it must be able to predict a certain amount of things. Then, what is the nature of Lord Buddha's incarnation?
He bewildered the Danavas.
What's that?
He bewildered the meat eaters.
He bewildered, yeah.
That because they were killing the animals?
He's a very interesting incarnation, Lord Buddha, because Lord Buddha teaches, he rejects the Vedas.
Mm-hmm.
So it is Krishna himself, or an expansion of Krishna, or a Shakti Veshavata, an empowered personality who's empowered by God himself, but that person rejects the Vedas. So it's a very interesting incarnation. It is God, but God telling us not to worship God.
Not worship me.
Yeah.
Who is God?
Yeah, or more worshipped voidness.
Yeah.
Or understand voidness. So that's an interesting concept. So that means we have a lot of faith. Because we respect an incarnation of Krishna who tells us not to worship him. But we understand it in the overall perspective. In the first canto, in the third canto, in the list of incarnations, Srila Prabhupada explains very nicely and very carefully about the purpose of Lord Buddha's incarnation. So we understand it. It is part of a master plan or a sequence of events. Buddha came for a particular reason to teach particular things. It is not the ultimate absolute truth. We don't practice Buddha's teachings necessarily. We follow the Srimad Bhagavatam's teachings. Although we accept that Buddha is an incarnation of Krishna, but we don't accept the teachings of the incarnation. So you have to understand things very broadly. This is necessary because what takes place when people are not very learned, they just take one small portion of the Shastra and they use that as a piece of authority. This will happen with Kanishta Adhikaris, and even Majjhima Adhikaris may do this. But an Uttama Adhikari, or someone who is very, very learned in the Shastra, he can understand how everything fits together. And sometimes you see devotees do this. They just take one statement, they say, Prabhupada said. Yes, Prabhupada did say that. Prabhupada said that on a particular day, in a particular time, in a particular circumstance. And that one instruction may not, you know, you have to take it in the context of everything that Prabhupada said. And if you take it everything that Prabhupada said, Prabhupada quite often said things which were, sometimes Prabhupada was very conservative in many, and Priyadananda Maharaj speaks about this very nicely in some recent discussions that he gives. He says that Prabhupada was very conservative and very liberal. Sometimes when Prabhupada would speak, he would speak very conservatively. But then other times he'd speak about exactly the same topic and he would speak very liberally. So then you have to take all of Prabhupada's teachings. Because Prabhupada's mood was quite different sometimes. You know, sometimes a certain say he was very unflinching, and the other times he's very liberal about the same topic. So we have to understand Prabhupada very broadly.
In general, is it correct to say that when he's writing Srimad Bhagavatam purports, he's conservative, and when he's putting practical application, he's liberal?
Generally, you might be able to say that, generally. But still, you'd have to look at everything. So in other words, you have to be very conversant and very learned in Prabhupada's teachings. And the problem is, one sannyasi said to me, one of the gurus said to me a few years back, he said, most of the devotees don't understand our philosophy very well. You know, even though they've been devotees for many years, they don't really understand our philosophy very well. So that's why Prabhupada developed these courses, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sarvama, because Prabhupada wanted us to become learned. He said the family title is Bhakti Vedanta. Prabhupada's name was A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami. So Prabhupada said that is the family title. In other words, Prabhupada was known amongst his godbrothers for being learned. We should also be known amongst the devotees for being learned. You know, all the devotees who take this course and other course, like, we should be known. Oh, they're the learned devotees. You know, they know the books. They know the teachings. They know the shastra. You know, they won't misconstrue things. Or they know. They can refer. Oh, Prabhupada says this, Prabhupada says that. How would Prabhupada balance it all? Like that. Prabhupada even changed his mind sometimes. You know, Prabhupada would say something in 1970, but in 1976 he'd say something different about the same thing. Because time, place and circumstance would develop. So we have to become very learned to understand these things. How do we reconcile it? Through guru, sadhu and shastra. Three-way checking. What is our guru saying? What is the sadhu saying? What is shastra saying? Because sometimes the gurus say different things. You look at ISKCON. Different gurus give different instructions. You know, one example is whether or not to bathe in Radha Kund. So what does Prabhupada say about bathing in Radha Kund? He's the founder of Charya ISKCON. If you read Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction, you should bathe in Radha Kund as many times as possible. He writes that in Nectar of Instruction. And yet, when he saw that his disciples were going to Radha Kund, that they were bathing not in the right mood, right? Then he said, everyone stop bathing in Radha Kund. Even though he'd written everyone should bathe as much as possible, then he gave an instruction to all his disciples, stop bathing in Radha Kund. And then near the end of his pastimes, then he said one devotee was going to Radha Kund, and he indicated to Prabhupada, why don't you come to Radha Kund and take bath? And Prabhupada said, you take bath for me. So he said to all the disciples, stop taking bath. And then he said, you go and take bath for me. So he gave permission to particulars. So Prabhupada gave different instructions. And then now if you look in ISKCON, some gurus say, don't bathe. Only take the water, put it on your head. And other gurus say, do bathe. So we have to take things in the total context. And there's many different angles of vision and like that. So on that particular thing, then whatever your guru says, then you can do like that. But you should ask your guru to reconcile all these things. And then the sadhus, and then the shastra. So we need guidance. We need maturity. Right? We need guidance from very advanced devotees to understand these things. Any points?
Why do you think your personal experience, that why we should not take bath in Radha Kund?
My personal what?
Your personal view.
My personal view is that you ask the guru. That's my view. If guru says take bath, then take bath. If guru says do not, If he says just put water on the head, then put water on the head. The fact is, it's the same anyway. So it's just up to what the guru says.
My question is, why we should not take bhajan? According to...
And if your guru says you can, then you can. You have to ask your guru, what does your guru say? That's the point. I asked my guru in 1994, I asked him. I said, I'd never taken bath in Radhakund before. I'd been to Radhakund about 3 times, but I'd never taken bath. So I went to him and I said, can I take bath? He said, you can take bath. But then other gurus, they say the disciples don't take bath, so then you have to follow what your guru has said. Is that what you're asking? Is that okay?
Prabhupada,
actually, as you said, he didn't say not to take part. But
he
going to,
they were just playing around the
some of
the
devotees. And he didn't want that, he wanted to, and going to be respected. Yeah.
And that's
so,
why,
so therefore, you have to ask your guru.
Yeah.
And see what your guru says.
Yeah, but see, the problem is within us, the Guru Maharaj, because we read the instruction book and then we went to Vrindavan and we didn't know that, you know, it was a Bahula Ashtami and everybody was taking bath, so we thought we had to read it. But now we know we should ask.
Yeah. It's okay. It's okay. It's not like there's any big offense. I mean, if you've done it, then you can ask Guru, if Guru says, but now you've already done it, so. The main thing is the mood. That's the main thing is the mood.
Yeah,
sometimes I go to, I think last year I took bath, or maybe I didn't.
No.
Last year, but I went more than once.
Oh.
I was thinking whether or not I took bath. I can't remember if last year I did or not, but I used to always take bath, and then now I don't always when I go, just because of circumstances. But you know, either way, I take the water on my head. So, you know, you may go in or you may take the water on your head, but it's more the mood that you do it in. That's the point.
See, coming to Lord Buddha, see, he came at the time when people were so at his days to kill the animals, and he had to stop them, and he gave them so much faith in him, all the people, that they just gave up. And then slowly, and then Lord Shiva came. And then he taught, now his
Shankar
God is there, but he's an impersonal.
Yeah.
And then Lord Chaitanya came, so he is personal.
Hmm.
So slowly they feel everybody else.
Yeah. Any other points? Which verse? 23. O Supreme Lord, the living entities in this world are now bewildered by your illusory energy. Becoming involved in the false concepts of I and mine, they are forced to wander along the paths of fruitive work. So now Akrura is analyzing why we are trapped within this material world. So according to the Bhagavatam, this is mentioned early in the Bhagavatam, we are trapped in this material world because of ahamameti, consciousness, which means I and mine. So that is the consciousness which traps us in the material world. And until we become free from that consciousness, we can't leave the material world. I am. So in your consciousness, you look at yourself. What do you think? I am what? Yeah, I'm spirit, soul, but I'm saying, do we think that? Yeah, we can, easy to say that. Anyone can say that. Right? But what do you think? Do you think I am servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna?
Slowly. I'm hungry.
Slowly.
I'm thirsty. Slowly.
Yeah, so in other words, that means I am the body. Not that. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of
Lord Krishna.
but not that devotee. I'm we say that. I'm serving him, I'm not going to serve him. I'll serve that one, and that one, but not that one. We actually do that. You walk into the Prasadam Hall Saturday morning, there's hundreds of devotees sitting there, and you know, your mind goes, I'll serve that one, I'll serve that one, I'll serve that one, I won't serve that one. Right? Or you'll think, I'll sit next to that one, and that one, but I won't sit next to that one. You know, we think all these things. That's material consciousness. So, actually we have to become servant of the servant of the servant, but that means all the devotees. That's not that easy to do, actually. To have that kind of consciousness is not so easy. It's easy to speak it. Anyone can speak that. Even I have devotees, sometimes they go, oh, Prabhu, I'm your servant, I'm your servant. You ask them to do something, they say, oh, I can't do it. You know, like sometimes at the farm we have like, you know, a festival or something going on, and you know, there's a lot going on, we need some help. And I say, devotees say, you know, Prabhu, can I do something? I say, yeah, can you, please, can you do this? And then I come back 2 minutes later, they're off, just walking off into the fields with the cows or something. You know, devotees say, can I do service? It means then you actually have to do the service. Yeah. If we're going to be servant of the servant of the servant, it means you have to be that. It's not as easy as it sounds. When Lord Chaitanya says dasa, dasa, anudasa, it's not as easy as it sounds. It sounds easy. It's not so easy to do that. Right? Aham brahmasmi, I am spirit soul. That's not easy to understand. Right? That's easy to say. We all say, I am not the body, I am the soul. Right? That's the most basic tenet of our philosophy. But to think like that, that's very different. Yeah, that's okay, but you still have to serve. That's the point. Okay, you don't associate intimately with some devotees because some devotees, they may be materialistic. So because they're materialistic in their consciousness, you don't associate closely with them. Still, you have to serve them.
How do you serve them?
Well, if opportunities are there, like if they're in the prasadam hall, then you serve. Or you preach to them, or you give them Krishna katha, or you give them an opportunity to engage in Krishna service, or how in many ways to serve. That's it. So it is saying here that this is what leads to our bondage. The consciousness of aham mameti. This is mentioned all through the Bhagavatam. This term is used in several places. Second canto uses it. It's used in several places in the Bhagavatam.
Fifth canto.
Which one?
Fifth canto.
Fifth canto. Yeah, very good. Rishabdev's teachings. I'm fairly sure that Prahlad Maharaj mm-hmm. uses it in the seventh canto. So it is something which is used again and again. It describes why we're in the material world. So we have to develop the opposite consciousness of what is being described here. Instead of I am the enjoyer, Ishwar aham ahambogi, Siddho aham balavan suki. Right? Instead of thinking I am that, we have to think the opposite. Instead of I am the enjoyer, I am the
servant.
It's the opposite consciousness. And instead of thinking this is mine, what is the opposite of that? Yeah, it belongs to Krishna. Yeah, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He had many kids. How many kids? Yeah, like something like that. 10, 12, whatever. Yeah, a lot of kids. Anyone here have 10 or 12 kids? No one has, right? Any devotees in this temple have 10 or 12 kids? Do you know anyone who has 10 or 12 kids? Yeah, grandmothers, like, you know, maybe going back. But I don't think anyone in our generation, it's very rare someone had 10 or 12 kids. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had 10 or 12 kids, right? But he thought all of this is Krishna's. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, I am the servant, I am the maintainer of Krishna's servants. My children, my wife, I see them as Krishna's servants and I simply maintain them as his servants. So that is the opposite of the mentality. They are meant for my enjoyment, No, I'm meant to serve them. It's a different mentality. And we mix it up all the time in our relationships. Sometimes with our wife or our husband, we think I am their servant. Other times we think they're meant for my enjoyment. Right? Same with our children. Sometimes we think I am there to serve them. Other times we think, well, I'm there, they're there for my enjoyment. So our consciousness is not pure as yet. But the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us how we should, Akura is saying, we should develop the correct mentality. I too am deluded in this way, O Almighty Lord, foolishly thinking my body, children, home, wife, money, and followers to be real, though they are actually as unreal as a dream. So this is reiterated again and again in the Bhagavatam. If you go back to Canto 2, Canto 2 says the material world is a
dream.
It is all a dream. So we don't have to take it seriously.
Daydream and a night dream.
Daydream and a night dream. It is what it is. It's a dream. Right? We don't have to take it that seriously. We get so caught up in the dream. Take it so seriously, the whole thing. He said that to me, she said that to me, they did that to me. It's just a dream. It's not such a big deal.
Is it our dream or is it Mahavishnu's dream?
It's our dream because it's Maya.
Our dream.
Yeah. His dream is Yoga Maya. Our dream is Maha Maya. So it is an illusion which we're going through. So it's something we need to realize. It's not that important or significant, this whole thing. We take it as if it's very important, very significant, but it's not that important or significant. The only thing which is actually important and significant in this whole dream are the devotional aspects or the spiritual aspects of it. That's what's important. The rest of it's unimportant. Rupa Goswami says, just do the needful. Be materially responsible. Get yourself through the whole thing. But it's just a matter of getting yourself through it, that's all. Just keep everyone as happy as you can along the way. Which is impossible anyway. You try to keep them all happy. You know, my family always, do this, like that. Yeah, okay. Try to keep them all happy, but they're never happy anyway. Even if you do everything they want, they're still not happy. So just do enough just to keep them all happy, just so your mind is peaceful so you can practice devotional service. That's what I do. I just keep them all happy. Yeah. And then when I get in the car, I shut the door, I just think, oh, thank God, and then I just drive the car away. Just keep them all happy. So they, because then your mind's peaceful. Otherwise they harass you, they just ring all the time. Any points? What's that?
But three things
is it? Three things are? I don't remember what was that.
Oh, you do.
What three things?
You said this. Rupa Goswami said three things. To maintain yourself and keep everybody happy. And what is
it? I didn't say three things, but. He just said that be materially responsible. That's all.
Materially
responsible. Yeah. You have to be responsible. That's about it. That's his basic.
Okay.
He mentions in Nectar Devotion, he said devotees have to be materially responsible.
Okay.
Don't be neglectful. We have to do things properly in this world.
How do we wake up from the daydream?
In this world?
Is it only at the time of death?
No, it's when you completely engage mind, body, and words in Krishna's service. Then you're not dreaming anymore. When we're fully engaged in Krishna's service, which is what sannyas is, then it's not a dream anymore, it's real. That's reality. But at the moment, we're not doing that, so there's a certain amount of dream in our consciousness. Okay.
There is a story that one man was dreaming, and he was sleeping, and his wife woke him up. To say something problem and said, I was dreaming like a king and you woke me up
put me in the video room.
Thus mistaking the temporary for the eternal. Okay, this verse is a very powerful verse. This verse is the definition of Maya. What does Maya mean? That which is not. So this verse, Akura is speaking about Maya. That which is not. Thus mistaking the temporary for the eternal. My body for myself. The sources of misery for sources of happiness. I have tried to take pleasure in material dualities. Covered in this way by ignorance, I could not recognize you as the real object of my love. Very powerful verse. Just as a fool overlooks a body of water covered by the vegetation growing on it and chases a mirage, so I have turned away from you. My intelligence is so crippled that I cannot find the strength to curb my mind, which is disturbed by material desires and activities and constantly dragged here and there by my obstinate senses. So Krishna speaks about this in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. No. That the mind should be controlled by the intelligence and the mind should control the senses. In the material world, the hierarchy is upside down. So therefore, the intelligence is controlled by the mind is controlled by the senses are controlled by the sense objects. But it should be the opposite way for devotees. Right? The intelligence should rule the mind, which then rules the senses, which then rules the sense objects. So the intelligence needs to become strong. And Krishna says in Gita, intelligence becomes strong when you study Shastra, which is what we're doing now. This strengthens our intelligence. Yeah? I know for myself, when I don't study, right, then my intelligence becomes less sharp, less focused. When I study a lot, much easier to focus. And secondly, you have to put into practice. Then your mind, your intelligence becomes strong. Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about this in, just thinking, I think it's Chaitanya Shikshamrita. He speaks about this. Intelligence becomes weak, particularly in Kali Yuga, through sinful activities, undisciplined activities, particularly illicit sex. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this makes the intelligence weak. Right? And then your intelligence cannot stay sharp and focused. So if you're if you practice the regulative principles, if you practice a pure life, means on the subtle level, means the mind, the intelligence, if they're purified, then they become very sharp. When we don't contemplate sense gratification in the mind. Easier to give it up externally, but in the mind still dwells in sex life and sense gratification. But if you can purify your mind of that tendency, the intelligence becomes very powerful, very focused, very sharp. So it means we have to practice. Any points?
This whole lecture of Ramakrishna Goswami Maharaj was telling that grossly, if we are not engaging in sinful activity, but if we are contemplating on that, it is as bad as we are grossly engaging. So it is, you know, if you are thinking no lusty desire or no sex, something like that. But if you are thinking like that all the time, it is, you know, almost you are engaging in this activity. So, you know, your mind also should be controlled. Not, you know, thinking all the time about that. Even you are thinking no, but still you are thinking about that only. Okay? You are wasting your energy and time in that.
Artificial. Being thus fallen, I am approaching your your feet for shelter, O Lord, because although the impure can never attain your feet, I think it is nevertheless possible by your mercy. Only when one's material life has ceased, O lotus navel Lord, can one develop consciousness of you by serving your pure devotees. Very powerful verse. This is why Akrura, he became perfect through Vandanam, through prayer. These prayers are very, very powerful. This particular verse we just read is very powerful. I was meditating on this today. So this is the system. The system is how to become purified in our consciousness. You have to serve the Vaishnavas. If you serve the devotees, you get the mercy of Krishna. Without the mercy of Krishna, life does not become successful. But Krishna's mercy only comes when the devotees are pleased. If the devotees are pleased with us, then we are guaranteed Krishna is pleased with us. If we just concentrate on Krishna but neglect his devotees, Krishna never becomes pleased. So that is the system, to satisfy the devotees. Okay. Then the last two verses, 29 and 30, Akrura is surrendering to Krishna. And he's revealing his heart to Krishna. Obeisances to the Supreme Absolute Truth. The possessor of unlimited energies. He is the embodiment of pure transcendental knowledge, the source of all kinds of awareness, and the predominator of the forces of nature that rule over the living being. O son of Vasudev, obeisances to you within whom all living beings reside. O Lord of the mind and senses, again I offer you my obeisances. O Master, please protect me who are surrendered unto you. So how do we stay protected from the influence of Maya?
Take shelter in the Lord.
Yeah, you have to engage in Krishna's service. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, develop your day in such a way that 24 hours a day you cannot help but think of Krishna. Right? Always be engaged in Krishna's service. In that way, you protect yourself from Maya's influence. Right? Maya doesn't have time to enter. Prabhupada explains that. Right? Maya only has time to get in. Prabhupada said, in like a needle, out like a plow. So Maya just needs a little gap, right? And we see that in our lives because we're not pure devotees. You just give Maya this much, the next minute. My Guru Maharaj said he was on a train in India, right? And the train was full, right? And he was sitting on the seat and there's so many people. And one Mataji, she came and she said, please. She gave him a look. She looked at him, like, please give me some room on the seat. So he thought, okay. So he moved, right? And then she sat. Right? But then she brought her kid, right? And then there's another kid, and then he said next minute he's sitting on the floor. Did he say you compromise that much? And he told the story to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was laughing, right? And Prabhupada said, this is what Maya is like. You give Maya an inch and then she takes a mile. And we all know that because we're not pure. We just compromise a little bit, next minute she takes over. That's material energy. So when you fully engage in Krishna's service, then Maya cannot infiltrate. Srila Prabhupada ki.